This podcast is from Allegro Non Troppo on Joy Melbourne 94.9 radio station, Melbourne, Australia, and is produced for you by Adam, Peter and Robert. You're listening to Allegro Non Troppo across Australia on the Community Radio Network with Adam and Peter. I'm Adam.
And I'm Peter.
And you're listening on your local community radio station. Most of us are going to have to face dementia or Alzheimer's at some stage in our lives, either ourselves or people around us.
Dementia is generally a term that describes a number of different illnesses which lead to a decline in mental or cognitive function. The most well-known of the dementias is Alzheimer's disease. Dementia is an illness which is rapidly increasing in prevalence, mostly due to the ageing of the population. In fact, the main risk factor for dementia is age.
In Australia, the 2006 estimated prevalence of dementia is 1% of those aged between 60 and 65, 6% of those aged 75 to 79, and 45% of those aged 95 or older. That comes from Alzheimer's Australia 2005 report.
Dr. Marie Farrow is a research officer with Alzheimer's Australia Victoria. She's an experienced researcher in the field of cognitive neuroscience. Her research interests encompass neurobiological and neuropsychological aspects of brain disorders. Her research has involved studies of the developing and aging brain, as well as neurological and psychiatric disorders using brain imaging, among other measures of cognitive function.
There are some specific issues we will discuss with Dr. Farrow as they relate to gay and lesbian health issues. Dr. Marie Farrow, welcome to Allegro Non Troppo.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
And I'll have to say I'm impressed by the work that you do. It sounds you must be quite an amazing person. How long have you been doing this?
I've been working in the field of dementia for nearly 3 years now, but I've been working in neuroscience for 15 or must be nearly 20 years now.
Okay, so you started off in neuroscience and then you specialised in dementia.
That's right.
Why?
I don't have a particular interest in dementia. I don't have any family members with dementia. I've never had anyone close to me. I have an interest in the brain generally and in what goes wrong in different disorders. Dementia is one that, as you've said, is growing with the ageing of the population, and it's an important area, so one that I'm really happy to be working in.
Are there any trends that indicate that the level of dementia that's happening in our community society is changing? Are we getting more people that are getting dementia earlier, or is it just about the same?
It's probably just about the same. We are getting better at diagnosing dementia. Mm-hmm. So we are diagnosing more people at a younger age, which is a good thing because that means they're getting the support and help that they need.
Because it's more visible and talked about more in community now, we tend to think, oh God, there's more people getting dementia earlier. But that's really, really not the case, is it? It's about the same.
It is about the same, and I think we just weren't very good at picking it up in the past. People were often misdiagnosed, for example, as having depression rather than dementia.
Let's go through a few definitions, Marie, if it's okay if I call you Marie.
Yes.
Let's go through a few definitions. First of all, can you give us a working definition of dementia and Alzheimer's?
Sure. Dementia is what we call an umbrella term. So it encompasses a range of different illnesses, as you said in your introduction. So really the word dementia describes the actual symptoms that people have. So the memory loss or problems with attention and concentration, the confusion, various symptoms that people can have. So when people have those sorts of cognitive symptoms that interfere with their daily life, they may be diagnosed with dementia. And the dementia, the symptoms are caused by a range of different illnesses. So the most common of those is Alzheimer's disease. What Alzheimer's disease does is produces things called plaques and tangles, which most people will have heard about. Very basically, they are little clumps of protein that form in the brain, and they gradually damage the brain cells and the brain cells' ability to function normally. And that's where the symptoms of the dementia come from that brain damage caused by the disease.
So are there any theories of what causes that? For instance, could it possibly be diet?
There are many, many theories. Diet probably plays a very small role, we think. And we actually don't know what causes Alzheimer's disease. So as you've said, the biggest risk factor is age. As we get older, we're much more prone to developing Alzheimer's disease, but we have no idea why some older people develop the disease and others don't.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm sort of getting towards that age group.
Mm.
And as you get older, a natural part, I suppose, of getting older is that you tend to forget things or find it hard to recall people's names. That doesn't hopefully necessarily mean that you're getting dementia.
No, not at all. As we get older, as we all know, our bodies start to get old and don't work as well, don't work as fast and efficiently as they used to. It's exactly the same thing for our brain. So as we get older, we are likely to experience some changes in our cognitive function, and in particular our memory. So we generally will start to get a little bit more forgetful. Now, that's not to say that every older person will be terribly forgetful. Many, many people live to a ripe old age and stay as sharp as a tack.
And I can tell you some of the ones that I work with. I'm thinking one particular gentleman who I work with who is 80, and I try and pull a wool over his eyes thinking he would have forgotten this or something like, and he remembers everything.
Yeah, that's
he's
right.
He's sharp, and he's got the sharpest tongue to go with it as well.
That's right. We're all very different, so it won't affect all of us in the same way. But your friend, even though he's still very sharp, it probably takes him a little bit longer to remember things than it did when he was younger. Our brain function slows down a little bit as we get older.
Let's have a little talk about Alzheimer's itself. Now, you've said that it's a disease, but we don't actually know what causes the disease.
That's right. It is a pathological disease of the brain. When the only way to diagnose Alzheimer's disease definitively at the moment, unfortunately, is at autopsy after the person has died, where we can actually look at the brain through a microscope and see those plaques and tangles in the brain.
You would think that perhaps by injecting a dye into the bloodstream that it would be picked up by MRI or something like that.
Well, we are working towards that. Not MRI, but PET, positron emission tomography. So that's where we inject a person with a radioactive label. And they have developed one which is called PIB, which binds to the plaques in the brain. So we can then put the person in a PET scanner and have a look and see how much of these plaques have actually built up in the brain. Now, that's not clinically available, unfortunately, as yet. It's still in the research phase of development.
Is it likely to become a diagnostic tool?
Possibly. We're not really sure. One of the issues with it is that the PIB compound that is used has an extremely short half-life.
Right.
So it has to be produced on-site at the PET scanner. It can't be, shipped around the place. And it's very expensive to set up the equipment to actually produce it.
Okay.
So they are doing a lot of research to try and use similar compounds with a longer half-life that will be more readily available.
As it's... From what you're telling me, the only really way you can diagnose Alzheimer's is by assessing cognitive ability.
That's right. That's how people are diagnosed, and they're diagnosed as having probable Alzheimer's disease.
And
if their cognitive function is affected in the way that it normally is.
So let's say that somebody goes forward and they have a cognitive test and they say there's a likelihood that they have Alzheimer's. What can be done?
With Alzheimer's disease, we do have some medications that don't treat the actual disease, so they don't stop the progression of the disease. With the plaques and tangles in the brain, they do build up and spread around the brain, so that the person progresses, their illness gets worse over time. So we don't have any drugs that can stop that at the moment. Once again, there is a huge amount of research around the world being done towards that end.
Can I just ask you a question about the plaques and tangles? So on a cellular level, how big are they?
Oh, good question. The tangles actually form inside the brain cells.
Okay.
So they're obviously smaller than a brain cell. The plaques can be quite large, probably around the same size as a brain cell.
So they're long-chain proteins or amino acids?
They are actually... broken down proteins. The one that forms in the plaques is a protein called amyloid, and it's actually a short section of a larger protein.
Right.
And we all have these proteins in our brain, and they have normal functions, But in Alzheimer's, the way this short particular section of the amyloid gets chopped off goes wrong and it forms into the plaques.
Right, because I can see this means it's going to be very, very difficult to find a cure. Drug-based cures are going to be... It's going to take a long, long time. Just wondering if there's any possibility of nanotechnology helping, but if it's that small, it's unlikely to help as well.
You hear... in the news and whatever, that one way of delaying the onset of Alzheimer's is to keep the brain active and do puzzles and all that kind of thing.
Yes.
Now, from what you've just said, I wonder if that really is a way of avoiding the onset of Alzheimer's, because if it's plaques and tangles, wouldn't that happen anyway?
It will happen anyway. However, we do know there is a huge amount of research now showing us that people who do keep their brain more active throughout life, and that may be through your education or your work or your volunteer activities like you guys are doing, or your leisure activities, people whose brain is more active throughout life have, on average, around about half the risk of developing Alzheimer's disease or developing dementia. So what we think is happening there is that their brain may be attacked, if you like, by Alzheimer's disease, but because they've kept their brain very active, they've built up what we call a reserve of healthy brain cells and connections between brain cells. So their brain is better able to perhaps use another pathway of the brain to get the same function achieved.
Well, that's interesting you say that, because a friend of mine works in the aged health area, and he was telling me of a man who is a highly intelligent man, and he went to the doctor because he felt that he was losing his cognitive abilities. And they went through the test and said, look, you're great, you're above average, so you've got nothing to worry about. And he said, no, I know that, but nevertheless, I know that I'm not where I was, say, a year ago. And he was quite convinced that he had the onset of Alzheimer's, which actually turned out to be the case.
Yeah, that's a common story, actually, and clinicians are starting to be more aware of that. So because these people have functioned at a very high level throughout their life, they may still perform at the normal average level, within that normal range. However, they have declined from their previous ability. Mm. And that's really what dementia and Alzheimer's is all about. It's about cognitive decline, so you gradually get worse and worse. So someone who has been functioning very highly, it may take a bit longer for them to actually get a proper diagnosis. And what we think is happening is that they've probably had Alzheimer's or whatever disease is causing the dementia for some time, but because they're so high functioning, they've been able to keep the symptoms of dementia at bay, and they'll develop those symptoms at a later stage.
Is there any particular trauma that can bring on dementia? And I'm thinking personally, because I'm going through a shocking phase of my life where I'm getting two really serious migraines every week, and the amount of work I used to be able to do is suddenly chopped right in half because I find myself quite debilitated. And I get this feeling that my cognitive processes are not as sharp as they used to be because of these migraines. Is that a reasonable assumption?
It is quite reasonable, because your cognitive processes can be affected by many, many different things. They can certainly be affected by the amount of stress that you're going through at a particular time, and also by illnesses. Mm-hmm. So if we're having to concentrate on other worries or issues or illnesses going on in our life, we have less resources to put towards being able to remember our appointments and things like that.
It's just an interesting process, and I'm sure a lot of people, when they've been sick or go through something, they do find that their cognitive processes become impaired. You're listening to Allegro Non Troppo across Australia on the Community Radio Network with Adam and Peter. Our special guest is Dr. Marie Farrow, and we're talking about dementia and Alzheimer's. Allegro Non Troppo is coming out of 3JOY, that's Joy Melbourne, gay and lesbian community radio station in Melbourne, and it's presented by Adam and Peter. Our special guest today is Dr. Marie Farrow, who is a neuroscientist specialising in dementia and Alzheimer's. We've been talking with Dr. Farrow about the things that cause dementia, and we've mentioned trauma. People can go through traumatic things like accidents, and they can have dementia. Or is there any particular accidents that seem to precipitate dementia?
Not particular accidents, but more serious head injuries, especially those involving some loss of consciousness. So it doesn't mean that everyone who, you know, falls off their bike and blacks out for 30 seconds is going to develop Alzheimer's, but they are at a slightly higher risk.
Do any people who get cognitive disability from trauma, do they recover?
Oh, yes, certainly. So cognitive trauma doesn't necessarily lead to dementia and a permanent cognitive impairment. People can recover. The brain, we now know, has a degree of what we call plasticity. So rather than, you know, being formed when we're children and then brain cells gradually dying and not being able to be replaced, we know that brain cells do continue to grow throughout life. And also that when a person has a trauma to a particular area of the brain, other areas can take over the functions.
Oh, really?
And they can recover. And the younger that you have the trauma, the better, obviously. The plasticity is stronger when you're younger.
Yes, there are some amazing stories of people with brain injury who have been told that they can never walk, but with grit and determination, they've actually managed to get back on their feet.
Yeah, that's right.
Dr. Farrow, one instance that may be of relevance to our community of service here is the dementia that's brought on by drug and alcohol abuse. Can you talk a little bit about that, please?
Sure. Alcohol we know quite a bit about, and the good news is that alcohol in moderation actually seems to be quite good for your brain. So people who drink in moderation actually have a slightly lower risk of developing Alzheimer's and dementia.
I think you just made a lot of people very happy saying that.
I thought I'd start with the good news first.
The problem, though, is the word moderation,
isn't
it?
That's right. The bad news is that excessive alcohol consumption does cause brain damage and can lead to an increased risk of dementia or Alzheimer's.
Okay. What about other drugs?
Other drugs we don't know too much about yet. It may be that, you know, in the future when people who are now using, you know, party drugs in their 20s and 30s, we'll know whether they have an increased risk of Alzheimer's when they reach their 70s.
Could we follow this conversation with a little bit of experiential talk here? I've been out on the gay scene for a lot of years, and has Peter. And we've got a lot of friends who smoked marijuana for a lot of years. And now when I look at a lot of them, they're almost basket cases.
Mm.
They're, you know, everybody says that marijuana's harmless and stuff like that. We've got so many of them that they have these schizoid paranoid episodes, and some of them you just can't have a conversation with them. They're just off their heads. Even when they haven't been smoking. Now, is this just me, a personal observation, or is there some evidence to suggest that this is correct? And I know you have to be very careful here.
Yeah.
So please be just speculative.
There certainly is some evidence. There's, you know, quite a bit of research being done in this area now. So we do know that marijuana and other drugs, when used chronically and, you know, excessively, can cause brain damage. So once again, they'll affect different people differently. Two people could have the same drug history and one will be a basket case and another will be perfectly fine. But certainly they can, in some cases, cause brain damage, which will lead to cognitive impairment.
One of the things that happens with young people a lot is when they hit 18 and then they get to the point where it's alcohol. And a lot of young people, they go through like a 5-year stage of just using alcohol, getting drunk endlessly. But most of them around about 23 to 25, they suddenly seem to calm down a bit. And then they learn to use alcohol responsibly. But those same kids at 18 to 25 who binge on marijuana when they get to 25, the ones that I know of have usually done their head in to the point that they're not the same people anymore.
Yeah, it can in some cases cause permanent damage.
So I guess the warning that we're giving out to the community on this is just be very, very careful, because you might think that marijuana is not doing you any damage, but in later life there's a possibility that regular use of marijuana could put you at greater risk of dementia and perhaps Alzheimer's as well. Would that be a fair statement?
I think we'd have to say at this stage we don't know. As far as marijuana and other drugs go, but it's certainly possible.
Yeah, I thought it might be. You're listening to Allegro Non Troppo across Australia on the Community Radio Network from with Adam and Peter. We've had a message from Doug Pollard who said he had an operation a couple of years ago and noticed that he had some cognitive impairment for about 6 weeks following the operation. Now, that sparked off a level of conversation we've just had with Dr. Farrow about general anaesthetic. Now, Dr. Farrow, I've had a couple of general anaesthetics, and let me tell you, I absolutely love it. When they put that thing in your arm, and then they say, they start putting the drugs in, and then they say, you're going to fall, you feel, it's just...
This count backwards from 10, and you only get to 9.
Yeah, but it was just this amazing experience of, like, falling into an alternative reality. It was just felt... But I didn't... I came out of it, and I was as sharp as a tack, and I never... But you were saying that some people do have some cognitive disability after having had an extended general anaesthetic.
Yes, absolutely. It's not unusual at all. Usually it's temporary, and we don't know precisely what causes it, whether it's related to the drugs used in anaesthesia, whether it's related to the trauma that you go through having surgery. We're not 100% sure.
When we look at the drugs that they include for a general anaesthetic, I believe there is, when you were just telling me about this, there is a drug that is included in a general anaesthetic to erase short-term memory. What were the three functions of the drugs that you would, that they use?
One drug puts you to sleep. Yeah. One drug knocks out your muscle function, which is obviously very important. You don't want to be moving around while someone's operating on you. And the other one, yes, shuts down your memory for a short time.
And that's in case you wake up during the operation.
That's right. You probably don't want to remember what's going on when you're being operated upon.
What would they do in that situation if you wake up during... Would they just give you more?
Yes, probably. Put you back, give you more of the drug that puts you to sleep. I'm not a surgeon or an anaesthetist, so
oh
I can't really...
Oh, my God. You've just put the horrors up millions of people, I would think.
As you said, it can be quite enjoyable. Just relax and go with the flow.
Often it's often puzzled me. Why do they ask you to count backwards? I mean, if you only get back, what does it matter whether you're... I mean, it's quite obvious when you've fallen asleep.
It is really just to make sure that you are falling asleep because you stop speaking.
I counted backwards to 10 from 10. And then he said,
got all the way.
Yeah, and he said, do it again. So I must have a fairly hardened system. You're listening to Allegro Non Troppo across Australia in the Community Radio Network. Our special guest is Dr. Marie Farrow, and she's a neuroscientist and neurobiologist. And we're talking a little bit about dementia and Alzheimer's. I wanted to talk a little bit about gay and lesbian people. There has been a brilliant study which hasn't yet been released but is going to be released soon.
Yes, on next week, actually, next Thursday the 19th.
And it's called
Dementia, Lesbians and Gay Men.
By Heather Birch, and the foreword is written by Justice Michael Kirby. Just having a brief look at it myself now, a couple of interesting things to notice: that dementia and Alzheimer's are not particularly addressed in the community for gay and lesbian people, but they say that 46% of gay and lesbian people live alone compared to 23% of the rest of the population. So gay and lesbian people who are experiencing some form of dementia or Alzheimer's are going to find themselves in an area of significantly more risk if they're alone. Dr. Farrow, there was a quote that I saw in the report, and I've only had a few minutes to read it, and I just wanted to read this quote for you. And this is from Dementia, Lesbians and Gay Men by Heather Birch, and it's Alzheimer's Australia paper number 15, and it came out in October 2009, but it hasn't been officially launched. And the quote is this: for many older gay men, the laws forbidding their expression of their sexuality shaped their younger years. Being oneself only with friends and closeted to the rest of the world was about survival. They may now find themselves again in an atmosphere that is not supportive and even perhaps hostile. Is that a reasonable quote? Do you think that older gay and lesbian people, if they get dementia or Alzheimer's, can be found to be in situations that are perhaps hostile?
Certainly, and what the report highlights is that there are issues particularly for people who go into residential care. So people are living in an environment where the staff and the other residents haven't known them and the way they live their life, and may in fact, you know, unfortunately there are still people in the community, and I guess particularly older people, who still have some hostility toward gay and lesbian people.
So I believe there are moves to set up and for some gay and lesbian nursing homes. I think there's two being planned, but they'll be many years away at the moment. But
I've heard that there is one currently operating.
Oh, really?
But I'm not sure of the facts of that.
Mm.
But the, in a similar way, there are some nursing homes that have been set up for particular cultural communities. So there are, you know, for example, Greek-specific residential facilities, and the staff speak Greek, and they have cultural activities specific to people from that background. So similarly, if we can have facilities that are specially for gay people, then perhaps it'll be a little bit easier for them to cope with moving into that environment.
And I think that the All Sail Foundation is pretty hard on the tail of this issue to set up resources for older gay and lesbian people. And the reports like this particularly highlight how important it's going to be in the future, because we have a large gay and lesbian population, and because of recent social changes to and attitudes, probably find more people now are out.
Yes.
And willing to disclose and identify positively with their sexuality. So we have to think about what's going to happen to them, happen to us, when we get to that age.
That's right. Well, people who are older may not have been able to do that in their younger years, so they may have lived a life in the closet, if you like. And as they, particularly with Alzheimer's disease and some other forms of dementia as well, people tend to regress back into their past life. So as an example, someone who has come from another country where English isn't their first language, one of the first things they may forget is how to speak English, and they'll only be able to communicate in their original language. And so for a gay person who has only come out in later life, they may, you know, forget that they've done that and go back to trying to pretend to be heterosexual again.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds quite reasonable. What about a few of the warning signs? Can you tell us about a few of the warning signs, the early warning signs, so that the community may be aware?
Sure. We talked about, you know, memory loss and other things earlier, and I said that as we get older, our brains are going to slow down a little bit, so there'll be normal changes that will happen for most of us. It's when those changes start to interfere with your daily life, so you're really forgetting things on a very regular basis, and that's starting to impact on your ability to meet your appointments and do what you're supposed to be doing. It may not be just your memory, it may be some of your language skills. So we all have difficulty finding a word that we want to say every now and again, but some people will start doing that all the time, and it really starts to impact on their ability to communicate effectively with others. It may be your attention and your ability to concentrate that starts to deteriorate. It may be that you're getting very confused about things on a regular basis. So it can be a range of different cognitive symptoms, but it's when they start to impact on your daily living that you need to think about it potentially being a problem.
Okay. The when things start to go wrong, if you do start to notice that you've got some form of dementia or it might be happening, what's some of the things that you can do?
The first thing you need to do is go and see your doctor. That's really very important, and a lot of people might sit home and worry about it, and they might realise that there's no cure for dementia, so they might think, what's the point? And then, you know, get very depressed about it. But really the first thing you need to do is go and see your doctor and get an assessment. So the first point of call for most people is their GP. If your GP might do some simple tests with you and talk to you and perhaps talk to a family member or a friend who knows you well and might have noticed the changes that are happening in you as well. And if they suspect that you may have a significant problem, they should refer you to a specialist who can do a thorough assessment.
Yes, when you say talk to someone close to you in that instance, though, I believe quite a number of people in that situation who have become very skilled at hiding it.
Yes, absolutely. People, that's an issue with going to see the GP too. We hear lots of stories of a partner taking their loved one along to the GP and taking months to get them to actually go and do that. And then the person puts on their best face with the GP, and the GP says, well, they're fine. They're getting a bit older, but there doesn't seem to be anything wrong with them. But the person who's living with them day to day realises that there are significant problems.
Well, wouldn't the GP be clued up enough to realise this and perhaps speak to the partner to get a more realistic overview of what the situation is?
They should do. That's exactly what they should do. Unfortunately, as I'm sure everyone knows, there are good GPs and not so good GPs. So, once again, I would say if you don't get satisfaction with the first one, then you know keep trying. Try another doctor until you get the help you need.
We've had some questions come in, Marie. Normally, we don't do questions because we're a network show, but these ones are really, really important. Lynn's just asked, after her mother died, she started taking drugs and heavy drinking at 45. She's now 49 and sees a difference in herself. Are drugs and heavy drinking linked to dementia?
We said before that heavy drinking certainly is. We know that people who drink heavily over a long period of time do have a slightly higher risk of developing dementia. Other drugs we're not really clear about yet.
And somebody asked, is there a link between taking long-term medication and dementia?
There may be some medications that long-term can have an impact on the brain. However, I'm not aware of any that are specifically linked to dementia.
Chris wanted to know, what is the role of playing a musical instrument in offsetting dementia?
Playing a musical instrument is obviously very mentally stimulating, so it's a great way of keeping your brain active. And what we think you need to do in terms of offsetting dementia is learning new things. So if you become a whiz on the piano or the guitar or whatever your instrument is, perhaps keep trying new styles of music and different pieces of music, and perhaps even try another instrument to learn something new.
Oh, that's interesting, actually, because I think I'm pretty well stimulated at work with the job that I do. But I know the job pretty well. So I should really think about engaging my brain in other means of stimulation.
Yeah, the research suggests that the more you do, the better. But you're right, I feel the same way. I'm very mentally challenged in my work too, and sometimes when I go home, I just want to relax and turn my brain off for a little while.
Have a glass of wine. White wine.
It's interesting. I'd like to look at a little bit about to do with dementia as it relates to a specific part of the gay and lesbian community, and this is HIV-related dementia. Because Peter and I have both had friends who've died from HIV, and we've had friends who've had HIV-related dementia, and it was terribly distressing for me to see these people go through this. And it was, ironically, it wasn't distressing for them, because it came on so quickly. They didn't realise they had dementia. Like, I had a friend who was in hospital, and he didn't realise he was in hospital. He thought he was in a hotel. And he was saying, can you call the waiter? And I said, yes. And he didn't realise that he was dying also. He thought he was like in this hotel and he was on an extended holiday. I suppose in that case, possibly the dementia was, I don't know, it sounds really awful, but it was probably a good thing.
Yeah, people with dementia, different types of dementia, whether it's Alzheimer's or HIV or something else, can often have a lack of insight into their own, you know, disability, which is another issue for people getting help in the early stages. So it's quite often a person around them who notices the changes first rather than them themselves, and they think they're going along perfectly fine.
People who are in the early stages of dementia would obviously know that it's happening to them. There must be a great deal of stress and anxiety that can be created in that situation.
Absolutely, and that's why Alzheimer's Australia offers counselling services. It really is important for people to try and reduce their stress and anxiety around it as much as they can, and the way they do that will vary for different people. So for some people it's about getting as much education and information about the illness and what they can do for themselves as they can. For others, it's about having someone to talk to and really talk through their issues and how they're feeling.
And what about maybe a group of people in that situation? They can talk to each other. Do you think that would be helpful?
Yeah, support groups can be very helpful for some people too.
A lot of gay and lesbian people go through various psychological traumas in their lives. coming out issues, relationships gone bad, family issues. Is there a psychological condition that can cause dementia?
We know that having a history of depression is linked to an increased risk of developing dementia. Okay. Whether we're not quite sure what the link is, whether it's due to, in part, the psychological trauma, or whether there are changes in the brain that occur in depression that then predispose someone to, having further changes that lead to dementia. But certainly psychological trauma doesn't help.
I have had very little experience with depression. I've had one, I think it was about 3 weeks of my life, about 15 years ago, where I was depressed for 3 weeks. That's the only time. And I was snapped out of it fairly well. But up until that point, I'd said, people who are depressed, for God's sake, all you just need to get a grip and get on with it and get over it. But it's actually, I know a lot of people who have chronic depression now, and it's quite a serious thing in our community. What's changed in the world? Because in the 60s, I didn't know anybody with that depression.
Oh, no, I think there were people, I would imagine. I mean, I shouldn't speak for the doctor, but it would seem to me that in those days, depression wasn't talked about the way it is today.
That's right. It's been around, since we've been around, but it's much better recognised and better diagnosed today.
Is there, when people go through... go through dementia, is it an on-off thing? Can they have dementia for a while and then become fully lucid again and then go back into dementia?
It can be for some people. As I said earlier, dementia is generally progressive. So okay. The disease that's attacking the brain continues and more brain cells die, and so the symptoms get worse and worse.
Because there's a phenomenon called sundowning, isn't there?
Yeah.
Is that just a myth or does that really
happen? Oh, no, it's very real. Once again, we don't know why it occurs, but it certainly does, where people around sort of late afternoon, evening, their symptoms can get a lot worse.
And the next day they're sort of more or less back to normal.
Mm. Oh, they really? Can be. So there's definitely fluctuation. You don't see a straight line of decline in a person with dementia. They will have their good days and their bad days. And there's a type of dementia called dementia with Lewy bodies where this is particularly prominent, where one day and even 1 minute a person can be thoroughly confused and have no idea where they are or what's going on, and the next moment they're perfectly lucid and communicative again.
Lewy bodies, did you say?
Yeah, Lewy bodies are another form of protein accumulation in the brain that attacks the brain cells.
This is a very specific science, isn't it? But there's still a lot of questions remain to be answered. And what you've described for us today is the complexity of treatment that's going, if we ever get any treatment for Alzheimer's disease, is just going to take so long. We're nowhere near getting anything helpful in the near future. Is that right?
Well, I wouldn't say we're nowhere near. We certainly have quite a few compounds that are currently in clinical trials being tested, and we're likely within a few years, perhaps 5 to 10 years, to have better treatments than we currently have now. You're probably right in that there won't be an actual cure. There'll be probably a combination of treatments that people will need to have over time to combat the disease. And we are starting to get better at that.
Does it look positive for the future?
It does. There is a great deal of work to be done. We need desperately increased funding for research if we are going to beat this. But it is becoming better recognised. There's still, some stigma attached to dementia, but that's reducing. People are becoming more aware of it and more understanding of it. So that's going to help with improving services and just the way we deal with people living with dementia in the community. So there is hope for the future.
It's a terrible thing for the partner of that person to watch their partner decline.
Mm.
And you see that portrayed sometimes on the television where the remaining partner can be very supportive, but it must be heartbreaking to watch their decline.
Absolutely. And people often talk about the person with dementia no longer being the same person that they fell in love with all those years ago. So, yeah, absolutely devastating. And those, the partners and the families need really as much support as the person with dementia themselves. Yeah. And Alzheimer's Australia is very focused on that in terms of providing education and support for families.
Dr. Farrow, this particular issue of Alzheimer's is one, as I said at the start of the show, that is going to affect everybody in the community. Everybody listening to this will touch their lives in some way, shape or form. Can you give us a message from your professional perspective to the community about Alzheimer's and dementia and about how it affects people and what we can do?
The message is that there are things that we can do. If you're worried about yourself or someone else, you really do need to get some help. There are other things that can cause cognitive impairment. So it may be that you have a nutritional deficiency that's affecting your brain. And if you can get that assessed and treated, you'll be back to normal. So there's no point sitting around worrying, oh my God, I'm developing dementia. You really do need to seek medical help. And the other point is that we can all do things like keeping our brain stimulated, keeping physically active, eating a healthy diet, and in particular looking after our vascular risk factors. So we know that people, if they have high blood pressure or high cholesterol or diabetes in midlife, so in their 40s and 50s, they're at a much higher risk of going on to develop Alzheimer's later. So even at a younger age when dementia is still potentially a very long way away, have regular checkups with your doctor and look after your health.
Dr. Farrow, is there an age, a particular age, where you can say this is when the danger's most likely to start? Is there a particular age you could give us to tell people to start being more aware of it from this age on?
From the day you're born.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Look after your children's health as well. There's, you know, growing evidence that what we do throughout life can have an effect on what happens to us when we're old.
Are there any young people who come down with dementia? I mean, children or?
Yeah, absolutely. It is very, very rare at younger ages, but it can happen. There certainly have been children diagnosed with dementia. And anyone who's under 65 and gets a diagnosis of dementia, we classify them as younger onset dementia. And we're starting to develop better services for those people as well.
Is there a likelihood of genetic predisposition? If your parents have had dementia, are you more likely to get it? And if they haven't, are you more likely not to get it?
Absolutely. If your parents or other family members have had it, you are at a slightly higher risk of developing it yourself. However, that shouldn't worry people. For example, if one of your parents has dementia, you're still more likely not to get it yourself than you are to get it, but you are at a slightly higher risk than other people who don't have a family history. There are a few very rare genetic forms of dementia, so specific gene mutations that actually cause the disease, but they're extremely rare.
And what about cancer and brain tumours? Can they cause dementia as well?
They can, in that if they're causing brain damage, they may bring on the symptoms of dementia. You probably wouldn't get a diagnosis. You might get a diagnosis of dementia, but they wouldn't call it Alzheimer's disease, or if it's they know that it's due to the cancer or something else.
I just had a friend who's had a massive brain tumour removed, and the size of that he told me was just phenomenal. He's perfectly fine.
Fantastic.
Absolutely perfectly fine. Didn't even notice there was anything different with him. Dr. Marie Farrow, it's been fascinating talking to you today about dementia and Alzheimer's. Thank you for the information and sharing the story of Alzheimer's and dementia with us. Hopefully, when you've got more good news to tell us in a few years' time, when we have a cure, we might be able to have you back on.
That'd be great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll be back with Allegro soon. Someone else will be presenting. Tim and Matt will have Allegro for you next week, everyone. So we'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye, everyone.
Bye.